August 20th, 2013. At this time, we will call the meeting to order and ask if any of you take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cutterback. Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
I did receive word that Councilmember Cutterback would be out this evening. She is on vacation, so will not be here this evening. All right, please join me now.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item this evening on the agenda is time set aside for comments from citizens to city council. This time is set aside for citizens to speak to city council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We'd ask that you please limit your time to 5 minutes, and also we appreciate your name and address for the record. I have a few or a couple here who have signed up. The first of which is Mr. Chip Hodges. Sir, if you would, sir, please appreciate your name and address for the record.
My name is Hodges Gallagher. Everybody knows me by Chip. I live in 123 East Rivermont. And I'm here speaking on behalf of the Church of Our Savior, Episcopal Church on Lewis Street, about the water bill and sewage bill. Very short, very sweet. When I graduated, well, a little forewarning here. When I graduated from high school, I had to give the senior speech. It lasted 33 minutes. And I remember something that Roy Rogers said, that if you go to somebody with your hands open, make sure they're smiling. So just start out, and I started out then, I'll say it now. Warden, parole board, fellow inmates, I'm here. So anyway, what it boils down to, we put in a victory garden in the backyard of the church to grow a few fresh vegetables for the needy and the hungry. 4 foot wide, 8 foot long, sits up off the ground 18 inches. We put this thing in last, I have to look at my notes here, I had to come down and get a copy of the bill. But we put it in last April. We used a total of 2. I guess that's 200 cubic feet of water, whatever the 2 denotes, when the bid, was first made. Since then, we've used 0 in May, 1 in June. July pops up a total of 59. The local detectives from the water department came out, the way I understand it, when the spike hit, they noticed it. They sent somebody out to check it out, could find no leakages or anything. So we had no leaky toilets where the water was running continually. The garden gets watered twice a week for about 15 minutes. We got a crop. We got potatoes, we got carrots, we got a tomato plant, made 1 tomato, we got bell pepper, it's got about 6 on it. So that's some food, fresh grown, for the hungry. But the big thing about it was that the water and sewage bill, our normal bill is $142.99 a month, which has been pretty consistent over the last year. Varies a little bit more during Thanksgiving because of extra meals prepared. We have 3 bathrooms, which are half baths, no showers, no tubs. Very little washing goes on as far as dishes or whatever. Everybody cleans up after themselves, paper plates or whatever. So the water usage in church is very low. But we get hit with this sewage bill, which has a $243.96 extra charge for extra water going through the meter. Now granted, if we were using the water and it was going in the sewer, yes, we should pay it. But watering in the garden to feed the hungry, that's not sewer water. That's going right back in the ground. Now, I don't know what the system is or what the ordinance is for the city about billing as far as sewer and yard water goes, but I wouldn't think that water that's going on the ground and not going to the sewer should be billed at such a high rate. I don't know what the answer is, but I'm looking for relief on the bill. We ended up with a total bill this time of $512 against a regular $142 bill, which is about three times as much. And we're a small church. We have a nice congregation, mostly elderly. We're nonprofit by any stroke of the imagination. We don't file nonprofit because I understand it's a long, detailed process. And if they won't get the PAC committees, if they can't do it, they're not going to let us do it. So basically what I'm asking as far as what can we do as a church to get some relief on a bill like this. If we've got a track record of using whatever the one denotes, if that's 100 cubic feet of water, that's 700 gallons for a unit of one. And it's saying that we use 49 in 1 month. So I don't know what the answer is, but I'm looking for relief. I got my hands out. So I don't know what you can do about it or whatever. That's basically what I'm here for.
Mr. Guy, thank you for your comments. Diane, I hate to put you on the spot, but would you be able to enlighten council on on the code?
Yeah.
And, Brad, you might have some thoughts too as to.
I have some ideas of what might be a remedy, but they would take a council action. The code does not provide for his situation. Is he in a situation for all residential accounts? We do winter averaging for sewer in the summer so that all the watering that people give over lawns and for their gardens does not get billed to sewer. The code specifically says residential only. It doesn't sit for the winter averaging that we do in the summer. It does not call out commercial, so staff on our own, we cannot go against the code. There is a section in the code under sewer called class of use or not specified, where it says that if there's a special circumstances as determined by the city council and is arranged by special contract with the city as approved by the city council, we can enter into a contract with this customer to allow winter averaging for their account, even though it's a commercial account. In that way, but we would have to do the contract retroactively, and I don't know if that would be legal or not. And also, once you have to treat all customers the same, so once you do it for one commercial account, you would, if any other commercial account came to you, you would have to do it as well. However, I do think what he makes a very valid point. You know, the water is not going into the sewer system, and he's being charged for it. But that's what's in the code right now.
So, sir, just so that you understand that any action that's taken would have to be approved by city council here this evening. Myself or staff do not have the ability to make any changes or special arrangements without council's consideration. City Attorney Lowell,
yes, sir.
Sorry to put you on the spot as well, but any thoughts in response to what Diane had to say this evening?
Well, I agree with Diane that under state law, the city's sewer rate classifications have to be uniform. You have a pretty broad latitude in defining what categories of sewer customers that you have, but within those categories, you have to treat all your customers for rate purposes equally, and that's just to protect the rights of those customers. I also agree that the speaker is making a potentially legitimate point concerning being charged for usage of the sewer that isn't technically happening. One of the options that I was just discussing with Administrator Brazel is a potential code amendment that establishes some type of an administrative waiver, or not even an appeal process, but some certification by which a customer can make application to the city on the ground that his or her property is uniquely situated and not actually putting the burden on the city's sewer system that the volume of water usage for that property would otherwise suggest. And there could be some sort of a documentation requirement, verification by city staff, and then some type of a recorded covenant or something that would be put against the property to clarify that. But the short answer is there is probably a way around this. It would take council action to establish the rate classification in your code, and I'll defer to Diane, and there's no reason to disbelieve her conclusion that that type of a procedure does not currently exist. But I believe that you could set one up if you wanted to.
So, the short answer is that there's a possibility of being able to support or assist you with your request. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen tonight. We'll have to have some staff, further staff review, and then our attorney review, bring back information to council if they should choose or would like, and then allow for council to decide on the issue. So at the very least, I appreciate your bringing this to our attention on this matter, and please stay in touch with staff. I know that you will. I know that we've talked, and we'll keep you abreast to.
Bottom line right now, pay the bill.
I would say that would probably be the best move to do at this point in order not to.
Well, as long as this is possible, rebate at the end. That's fantastic.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Councilmember Geary.
And thanks. I just added one clarification. The spike was water used. I'm assuming you guys had a conversation. It was water.
I did not staff it, but yeah, okay. I found it printed out of his account. Yeah.
Because I could see them. I mean, there was all single digit numbers, and then there was this one big double digit number. And I mean, it looked weird to me. I'd never seen that on my bill before. So
and
I'm just trying to figure out why
it did go back down. So
it went right back down. So was there actually that much water used?
Yeah.
I mean, like a faucet was on, and there was just that much water being used that particular month.
If he's watering twice a day for 15 minutes a day, he would use that much water. Yes.
All right. And so then that was done that month. And then, but the actual issue was with the sewer rate, because the water wasn't actually going to, there was no burden on the sewer, it just went right into the ground. That was fine. All right. I just wanted to make sure I understood what the spike was actual water use.
Yes.
So from that standpoint, it was actually water used. But the sewer station. All right, thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't see which was first, so we'll go in alphabetical order. Councilmember Gamble.
So I would be interested in seeing some, but I guess the one question I did have, because how close is this to the request that we got previously in the evaporation of water from the laundry? We've gone down this road before. So I guess, I mean, if there's some recommendations and we can bring it back at a later date, I'd love to see that stuff. But at the same time, I would like to remind us, council, on how we viewed that particular instance, you know, across the board, so we're being a little consistent there. You can respond.
I just wanted to remind council, I'm sure everybody knows that we do not have sewer meters in the city of Monroe, so that's why sewer rates are based off of water usage. It's that simple. There's no way to regulate how much is going in somebody's sewer, so that's why it's based off the water rate. So we would have to go with a different component, and again, that's got to be made up somewhere down the line. We've looked at the way we bill, we've had recent requests about the way we bill, and some citizens that aren't happy with the way we bill commercial accounts, for example. Most recently this week, we've had complaints about that. That is a huge discussion. Our rate format is set up specifically based on our projects that we have. Everything's a formula, so if we start looking at that, we'd have to start from scratch.
Sure. But, I mean, I've heard from, you know, the mayor, Diane, everybody's in agreement with the attorney that, you know, hey, this is a good point, so maybe it would warrant further review, and maybe we can bring back.
an issue. I'm glad you brought it up, so yes, I agree with you on that. Diane, I'm just curious, did you say that this 50 or whatever it was, 49 usage was typical of 15 minutes a day of extra water?
That's a good idea.
Or did I miss that?
He does a total of half an hour a day. It's 15 okay. minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening.
Because the last time, we did have a concern a few months ago about theft. It was a potential theft of water from a commercial site in town. And I wasn't sure if this would be the same effect. But this doesn't appear like appear to be at that.
It has since gone back down. I don't know.
That's fine. I didn't know if you had any ideas.
One thing to consider, though, is what differentiates this customer versus, say, maybe the laundromat is this is a nonprofit.
Right.
This is a for-profit.
Thank you.
That's very well. Thank you. Wasn't the laundromat requesting a discounted rate because they use so much water? And versus this situation is somebody that's watering a garden and getting charged sewer rates for. I mean, it didn't sound like he was concerned about not paying for the water. He was concerned that he's being charged the same amount for water going down the sewer when in fact it's not going down the sewer.
True, and he was talking about evaporation rate as well. Mm-hmm. Just like the laundromat case, there was the laundromat case that came along that when the laundry goes into the dryer, the stuff goes out the vent, knock down a sewer pipe.
That's correct. Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Okay. Thank you. We do have another individual signed up this evening. May Ovidis. If you would, please, you may approach the podium, and we appreciate your name and address for the record, if you would.
Okay. Well, my address in Duval is 15605 North Avenue, 3rd Avenue Northeast. Purchased a property on Heinz here, and I don't know the number. So I'm sorry, they took the numbers off the painter, and I just don't know. And I'm only saying that I bought it, and they had, and the water bill, that's my problem, the water bill. And so it came to $94, and I hadn't signed the paper in time because nobody lives in the house. It's an empty house. And I'd only been in it once. Today I was there cutting grass, but once. So there's no water now. And so $94 for just once seemed pretty high when there was only realtors going in it before. And I was just asking for some help, and I have gotten nowhere with writing letters, phone calls, things like that. So I've come down here and just asked. Just this one time is all I'm asking, if I can please have some type of help on it, because it's an empty place that nobody's ever been in. So certainly no sewage, no water, no nothing is used. And so I'm just asking for relief on that one, and then never again, because I understand now I've had really serious illness at home, and it's just had my head in the clouds, and today it's a culmination of all of everything that's gone wrong, and thank heavens it turned out all right, I think. And so if I just get some help from that point, I'll be all right. You know, I always pay things on time and everything, so there'll be no question, but just that one time, I'd appreciate it, because 94 is a lot for an empty house that nobody ever went into. And because of the illnesses and so on, it's difficult to do all at once. Thank you very much. That's it.
And again, any action that might be taken would have to be at the direction of council, because code is specific with regards to residential water bills and dying. I hate to put you on the spot, hopefully you know off the top of your head, but could you remind the council of what code provisions are?
This customer has been given a 6-month vacancy relief, so she will not have to pay for 6 months. She has paid $25 since June, and so there is a balance to do.
I did pay a good faith bid to show I didn't pay my bills, and now I got late charges for while I was waiting for answers from my letters that I'd written, and nothing came of that. Then I got more late charges, then I got a pink note, pink letter, and so now I'm just getting in all kinds of hot water over a bill that I only asked if somebody would listen to me and, you know, do something about it.
The directors were using that.
It's getting ridiculous.
So the understanding is, if I may, for clarification on the council, is that water was being used prior to the purchase of the home, And you received the bill after the purchase of the home?
Yes.
Is that... We may need some clarification there as well, but...
I mean, it was a bank loan, and I assume somebody had water on it, you know? In fact, there was when we went in there, there was water in the faucet, so yes. Originally, but then we never... Nobody ever did anything, or moved in, or nobody moved in. Nothing happened. So, could I just leave it at that and hope somebody will pay attention to that, please? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Signed up this evening to speak before council during the time set aside for comments from citizens. But as always, I'd like to open up to the members of the audience. If there's anyone who would like to address council at this time, you may do so. Just ask that you approach the podium and provide your name and address for the record. Seeing nobody jumping out of their seats then, I'll assume no one at this time. And with that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Hanford.
Motion to approve consent agenda. As a
whole. All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Davis to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Moving on. Our first new business item here this evening is a discussion amending the council rules of procedure, and that will be headed here this evening by City Administrator Brazel.
Thank you, Mayor. This is something I've been working on for quite some time, looking at changing the rules of procedures to reflect current practices. This did go in front of the Council Legislative Committee and was gone over with a fine-tooth comb. We looked at doing away with study sessions and just having one type of meeting per month. That meant adjusting the agenda to reflect that. We just have a standard agenda we use every week. We also discussed the item at the bottom of our agenda where we have to extend past 10 o'clock, and there was consensus that council when that was discussed to keep that language in place, so that's been kept here. All the rules have, the rule amendments have been reviewed by legal counsel, and he weighed in on each of those. And other than that, I'm going to turn it over to the Legislative Committee Chair, Councilmember Ed Davis, for comment.
Councilmember Davis.
So, yeah, like it was said that we went over all these things. The idea, I believe, was to streamline the whole process a little bit and change it from the study session or having study sessions when we need them or presence of it. So if anybody has any questions about any of these changes.
Councilmember Davis, may I ask if the Legislative Committee was in support of the recommended changes? Is that what I'm saying?
Yes.
All right. Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. Gene, I'm just curious if there were any changes since our last meeting of the Legislative Committee. Looking through the blue lines and the red lines, it looks like everything we talked about last time I was having, I didn't really see any other changes. Because, I mean, if there aren't, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't just move forward with this. It's been kicking around for a few months. It's time to do something with it. So, yeah.
Correct. It's pretty much the same format that the committee reviewed.
So legal counsel didn't find anything, there was nothing, no issues or changes that needed to be made based on what was presented?
That's correct, counsel. I made a few recommendations to Ms. Martinson when she forwarded the draft to me. All of my suggested revisions, which were frankly very minor, were incorporated into the draft in front of you, and I don't have any further concerns.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I just have a question in section 5.1.10, final action. yellow section, it says that every effort will be made to provide meeting materials to the council 24 hours in advance. And was there a discussion in the committee on that? Because further on in the document talks about that all the agenda items in our package should be available Wednesday before the meeting. And I know that in the past, and it's been better lately, but it's troublesome to come to a council meeting and have stuff that you haven't even had a chance to review yet that's put on your desk, and then we're expected to take final action on it that night. So I was just wondering if there was any discussion, since it is highlighted there, and kind of why the language is so soft on that it should be 24 hours in advance and not giving us a little bit more time than that.
City Administrator Bradley, yes.
There was a bit of discussion on that item, and we settled on every effort because that's basically our practice. On a weekly basis, we push and push to get this information to council, but on some cases, if it's under staff review or waiting for documents to come from a consultant, or maybe it's a contract we're waiting to get, it's nearly impossible to get that any sooner. So, again, there was a lot of discussion about this. We did soften the language because of that exact situation. It doesn't happen often, but we didn't want to paint ourselves in a corner saying we had to do something, because if we stuck with a have-to language, that meant that that particular item would have to go be pushed out maybe a week or two prior to coming back.
Was there, okay, and maybe I didn't see it in here, but was there, I'm okay with that as long as there's some definitive language talking about that things will have a first and second reading, and I didn't see where that specifies that everything would have a second reading.
No, that should be in there.
Ordinances specifically will have a first and a second reading. Resolutions, I believe, are just a single reading, as I recall.
Right. It might not be a highlighted item because I don't think
we changed it.
It's 7.4. Ordinances shall be read two times before adoption unless the council waives a second reading.
That's good to there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
I guess the only thing I would add to Councilmember Williams was saying right there, the way that reads, it actually makes it sound like it actually could come within 6 hours or 5 hours or.
You for coming to that.
Yeah.
That would most likely be something that we would, this body in particular, wouldn't take action on that evening. And based on our past comments, that would most likely be something if we didn't have time to do this. That's why it ended up on our agenda. At least in past discussions we've had, that's something that we would put off. And gives us the flexibility to do that. You know what? Actually, it's painting the street corners yellow, something that's simple versus something that's a big deal. We're going to
make. And I appreciate that. When was the last time this was modified?
Cool. Oh,
2011.
Oh. To this extent?
No, but.
There's a resolution from 2011.
I guess on
the modification.
The only point I'm trying to make is I get that.
Yeah.
The composition as of right now, I'd be more concerned. Until 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, the makeup is going to be different. That's all. I'm just looking at it from that lens, making sure that can't, happen. Hey, it says it right here. What are you talking about? We got the material out. We did every effort we could. Within 24 hours, we couldn't do it, so we did it within two. That's all.
To answer you, because there may have been a minor change to the rules in 2011, but the rules that exist today were done 6 years ago. I mean, that was the last time a major change. There might have been even longer than that. Part of that was, I'll leave it white, but that's it. This is very hopeful rules here, I mean. City Administrator Bradley.
And as I recall, the minor change that the mayor speaks of was specific to the double, the two times in front of council on ordinances. I believe it was Councilmember Cutterback that had asked for that, and it makes sense, so we move forward in that direction.
On ordinances.
Yeah. On ordinances specifically.
We've done it for even resolutions. The council rules resolutions. Or council has done it for resolutions as well. So tonight, City Administrator Brazel looking at direction, or looking for direction to staff, and one recommended direction would be to bring back a clean clean copy for implementation, approval and implementation.
I think that there's a clean one attached here.
There's a clean one attached. They could go that route, or they could also, you know, do the first reading of the work, or the resolution this evening, and do two readings of that. That'd be fine. Or we bring it back the 1st of September for final of the resolution.
Why wouldn't we just, it's a resolution, why wouldn't we just vote on it tonight? We've talked about it.
You certainly could.
You certainly can. Councilmember.
I'm sorry, I have the floor. Then in which case, if there's an actual resolution number, is there an actual resolution number that would be associated with this? And if so, I'll include it in the motion. We have a clean version.
The next number would be 2013-021.
And so the last attachment is the proposed resolution, and that would be 021. And the red lines are just the date, because it says 7, looks like it says 17 in the date.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm
sorry, 2011-17 is what you're editing. Okay.
Right.
What would be editing? Okay, well, I move to approve resolution 2013-021, a resolution of the City Council of City Monroe, Washington, repealing and replacing council rules and procedures adopted by resolution 2011-17.
Sorry.
Okay, motions made by Councilmember Gary and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to approve resolution 2013-021, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Monroe, Washington, repealing and replacing council rules and procedure adopted by resolution 2011-17. Any other questions or comments? Seeing no lights or hearing no comments, we'll take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. All right. Thank you to the committee and thank you to staff for the efforts that you made in preparing what you had here for us this evening. Appreciate the work, and I think that will go towards being creating a much more efficient and effective process for council moving forward. All right. Second item this evening on our agenda is traffic calming policy, and that is Mr. Fowler.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we've talked about this a few times over the years, and I was directed a while ago to come back with a proposed policy. I've actually come back with proposed guidelines. Looked nationally, actually, about what other people did and at more local examples, specifically in the cities of Kirkland, Redmond, and Bellevue. I like Bellevue best. Redmond's answer was, well, we don't have too much. Some stuff, I actually don't look at Bellevue, theirs is better. And the city of Kirkland has suspended their program because they don't have any money anymore. Basically, it sets out the standard ways of doing traffic calming is the three areas or thrusts. One is education, enforcement, and engineering is what it's called. So basically doing something physical to the streets. Unlike Kirkland's and Redmond's processes, which actually have a two-phase process, is that the if something is happening, the neighborhood is required to do the education and enforcement pieces first and wait for a year or two to see if those actually are effective, and then they're allowed to proceed with the engineering proposals. The way I have it set up now, based on the city of Bellevue, allows that if there is a large problem and the city council has the money to do that, we can go directly to the engineering solutions. The way it's set up, it's set into three branches, is education and encouragement and enforcement, which is basically educating the people on what the speed limits are, and you know, remember that you're going through a neighborhood area here, and you should be going the speed limit, which is 25, things like that. Enforcement involves the Monroe Police Department issuing more tickets, modifying the streetscape, is the things like installing speed humps, one-way streets. There's also other things there, mounds, chicanes, choke points, buttons, cushions, all those kind of things, which are basically about the same kind of thing. And then we've also included parking, is because we have had some people talking about parking in their neighborhoods, specifically from the Lake Tai Park during large events. So that allows there to be some consideration given to those kind of things. The big thing about the modifying the streetscape is that it's very expensive. We've looked at both installing speed humps, since that's what the original request was for, so we did some cost estimates for that. Installing them ourselves costs about $6,000 a piece. That is actually about the same price as purchasing the preformed rubber ones. So either way you do the portable ones or the permanent ones, they're $6,000 a piece, and the current state of the art for speed humps is that in order for them to be effective and not just having someone slow down and go over one bump and then floor it to make up for last time, is that they need to be placed in a series of threes, which is $18,000, you know, for a set of speed bumps. And as you may recall from previous budget discussions, the street fund does not have a lot of money in it. So I think that's all I have to say. Oh, one other thing, just since the police chief is here. One of the things we did not borrow from Bellevue was having the police chief dress up as a giant bumblebee to give safety lectures to school children.
Is that going to be an official council action?
So if there are any questions, I'm going to answer them.
Is there a motion to ask Brad to add that in?
Thank you. Brad, so Cindy, do you have rubber speed bumps?
Yes.
They're portable or temporary?
Well, I mean, that's the idea of, you know, you put them down and if all the neighbors go, egads, we really didn't want this to happen, they're easier to remove than, you know, pouring concrete.
But are they reusable? So you go down in section of three and then it calms down that particular area and move over to another hot section in town.
Yes, they are reusable, yeah, because they just have basically, you know, nails driven into the asphalt as you pull the nails out and you move them.
Okay, I don't know what the issue is, or whether or not having holes in the asphalt.
Then you'd have to plug the, you know, hole so you can get water in and destroy the street.
Potholes. Okay, so you could also take the speed humps and having moved them to another location. Yeah, I think we've already answered that question. So we'd be able to put them in multiple spots. What's their average lifetime? So how many times could you move them before they explode or whatever?
Don't know. None of the literature says that. So.
Okay, so at least two.
Yeah.
Right. I'll accept that.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Geary, or I'm not sure. Councilmember Geary?
Thank you. Yeah, fine. Thank you very much. Brian, yeah, I've looked at that. The city of Portland uses some of those temporary ones, at least they had in the past. I've looked at some of those. $6,000 is a little higher than I remember. Is that like from the speed bump catalog or something? Or is that like a standard price?
Yeah, that's traffic logic.
Is that kind of the standard?
Yeah. And I looked around at the last thing. Those were the cheaper ones.
I thought they would be, just, you know, from the uneducated standpoint of that kind of stuff, I think that something that would be cheaper than the actual, you know, pour the asphalt in the perfect shape, have the striping and the whole thing like that, but it ends up being about the same price as what you're saying. Interesting. Okay. Personally, I think that portable ones sound like a good idea. One, I'm not on board with this. I don't think we're actually going to know unless we actually do it, you know, unless we allow it in a particular area. You know, we've seen some of these speeds. We've seen, you know, it's really the spikes, I think, that are the most concerning. I think the average you said was 28 miles an hour, which is 3 miles over the speed limit, but something's pumping it up that high over the speed limit. Given that this is a contained community, there aren't any, we're talking specifically about Stanton Mills, it just, it feels like a great place to start and try this out and see if it works. And if the temporary ones are temporary and they're removable and usable somewhere else, and, that to me seems like a better use of our money if we're going to go down that route than putting in something permanent, because then you can see that you can see that it works, see that it does reduce the speeds in certain areas. So signs, yellow lines, painting, stuff like that, if they aren't following that today, they're not going to follow it. I mean, that, you know, when I think of it, you need an actual deterrent, and the yellow line's not really going to be a deterrent to me when I think about it that way. So from a temporary, I'm certainly interested in the temporary speed bump solution and looking a little bit further into that if we were to go down that route. I didn't make it all the way through the 34 pages in this thing, I will admit. You are looking for approval of this particular document tonight?
If that's what the council wishes. This exact document will go up, and we format it a little bit better.
Okay.
Kind of page number, you know, level numbers on the site, things like that, conceptually. One thing I might mention that you may not have picked up on is that most of the time the triggering mechanism is an 85th percentile speed of over 35 miles an hour. And as you mentioned, Stanton Meadows only has 28. So speed humps would not, per this program, speed humps would not be eligible to go into Stanton Meadows.
Which, for me personally, that would be an issue. Why not try it in an area like that? I've been through Kirkland, been over their residential humps before, and it slows people down. And again, they don't have the money for it anymore, and they're a little bit different. I certainly want to apply, you know, best standards, best practices. I appreciate the work that has gone in there to look those up. That self-contained community to me just seems like the right area to try this out. And it's no, not major roads, and there's been a defined issue. There's a community that's asking, you know, if it's something we can do, it's portable, it's temporary, it can be removed, it can be taken somewhere else. That doesn't seem like money that's poorly spent in potentially solving a problem that might be even more widespread around town. Some good solutions for this. So those are my thoughts at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I call, thank you, Brad, for pointing that out. I had
been
going through here, was looking at that and saw that the 85% was there. And so in a case such as that which Councilmember Gehring brought up, these guidelines would not work for that. They would not be approved. So I guess the question to council would be, is there a recommendation that you might have where a concern is raised, yet the speed limit does not meet the recommended guideline? That would be a question that I'd throw out. Councilmember Camp. Hi.
Actually, I have my shot already, but I just had a question about the use of a jersey barrier to narrow the lanes. Mm-hmm. As one option without spending $6,000. I don't know how much a jersey barrier or a concrete barrier would be to narrow the lane enough to cause people to slow down.
It wouldn't be a jersey barrier, it'd be a curb extension.
Something. Yeah. I saw them recently, and I noticed that they did work at this
right
location.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's that is also $6,000, and if you have to have three,
it's not quite as much, but it is cost the money to, you know, dig out the asphalt, you know, put the curb in.
Temporary measure.
Well, it's temporary measure. You have to find something, but you can't use jersey barriers because people run into them and things. And, you know, other issues, liability issues for them. So, but yeah, I mean, there are little curbs that they make that you could put in and things like that. there's reflectors and things like that. You can do it with paint, all sorts of things like that. So there's a wide gamut of things that you can do. And usually most of the things are done temporarily first. Anyway, I guess we did, I forget, years ago down on Blakely and Madison and Powell, I do believe it is, we put temporary traffic circles in to see how those would work, and right. Nobody liked them. So basically it was, we had an arrangement of the barrels, big orange barrels, mm-hmm. in the center of the intersections as a temporary measure, so we had to spend a bunch of money to do those.
So before we got to the $18,000 temporary speed humps, we would have less expensive alternatives?
Well, I mean, there's, if you're going to go speed humps, that's $18,000, because either they're permanent or temporary, it's $18,000. You can try other things, you know, there's a whole range of things.
And that, there.
Yeah.
And that was my question, whether or not there were other alternatives which are less expensive prior to going to the temporary or permanent.
Yeah.
And the other point, as mentioned by both you and the mayor, is while the average speed is 28 miles an hour or something, it's the outliers who are doing 85,
right.
65, 20, 55, and a 25 zone. Right. That's what I'm concerned about. One of those can take out a family,
right.
as we've seen in some recent accidents. So anything that will help reduce that, I think, is worth it to the community.
Right.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. I'm going to, I don't know, your lights fall at the same time. So, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Brad, help me understand what our options are. If this sounds like what we're looking to do is adopting a residential traffic guidebook, which has a hefty price tag. You know, the numbers in here are $300,000 a year. If the homeowners association just wants to come and say, we just want the authority to put up our own speed bumps, we'll pay for them, why can't we do that as opposed to going this route?
Because it's a city street and we're liable and responsible for what happens to it, and we have to maintain them afterwards. However, you could say that this is approved, and if it's not budgeted, if the homeowners wants to give the city $18,000 in order to do that, that would be an option, because you could have the people who want it to be installed pay for it.
Well, I guess I'm concerned about opening the can of worms citywide, and we don't have money to do this anyways. And, you know, since I've been on council 3.5 years now, this request has come up one time from one homeowners association. I would think that if a homeowners association came and said, we have the votes, we want to pay it, we'll fund it, that's a completely different issue for me than to say that we're going to open this checkbook citywide and have, you know, as soon as speed bumps are free, that everyone's going to start asking for them, or a lot of people start asking for them. I don't remember the number of how many they were looking for, but from what it sounds like in here, you're saying that that number, you have to multiply it by 3 because...
Well, the streets aren't that long, so, you know,
but
it's a circle between, they wanted, I forget, they wanted 8, I
think? Yeah.
Something like around there.
Yeah, between 6 and...
So I'd be completely hesitant to vote to pass this citywide because there is no funds available for it, and I'm very concerned about... You know, when a city like Kirkland says we don't have money for it, we're not going to have money for it either. So it seems like that doesn't make any sense to me. I'd be more interested in passing something that's a little bit smaller in scope that allows for homeowners associations or people that want to pay for this themselves an ability to do that. Because even through this policy, which I'm assuming has been kicked around a lot more than we have as a council, they still put guidelines that would make it so speed bumps wouldn't even be allowed to go in Stanton Meadows based on the traffic studies that were done. So there's a reason, I'm assuming, that they settled on those numbers and they had a lot more discussion than we did. So that's my feeling. So
thank you, Councilmember Gamble. Very similar to Councilmember Williams. I guess that, you know, the piece that, you know, I would look, you know, Kurt, based on your comments, that, you know, some of what's already in the policy is putting in some of the guidelines around guiding kids. Just anybody come and say, hey, I want a speed bump, or I want this. If there actually is some logic, that's what I see, right? Into doing a study and that sort of thing. But then maybe putting into that, hey, if it doesn't meet. Well, because, I mean, if you go through and you do the traffic study and everything, and all the data tells us this is a safety issue, this is a hazard, I would think we would want to take a look at that from the city's perspective.
But if it's, you know, because that's data speaking, right? To me, that always, you know, speaks to me. And then if it falls underneath that threshold, then maybe we put in language, you know, but, you know, if this falls with, you know, under, but if a homeowners association or whatever, you know, feels that it is warranted, they want to, you know, bear the cost, you know, then maybe, you know, we look at that. But, I mean, that's kind of my take. And then the other question I had was just, I'd be interested in seeing the cost breakdown on speed humps. What vendor was it again? Like
Traffic Logics.
Traffic Logics.
With X.
So I'm looking through. I don't see that in the material. So maybe we put in speed pumps before. I just don't remember. I have the city, but where it worked. It didn't cost
well, much. Well, no, because we put in speed bumps.
That's right.
Yes. We're talking speed humps.
Okay. Yeah. I still want to see
speed humps. Are 22 feet wide.
Got it.
Yeah.
Still, yeah, I would be interested in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll bring you the quote.
That would be great. I would. And was that, is that the only city approved vendor or
no.
Is that, so there's other, that, but that's just the price from that vendor.
That's just the price from that vendor, yeah.
Okay, so we didn't look at any other vendors, just that one.
All right.
Perfect. That's fine. Thanks. Thank you, Councilmember Camphor.
Yes, thank you. There's lots of different options here. Are we talking about something that's going to go from curb to curb? So
well,
can't
sure.
Just drive around.
Right, yeah. You know, there's a gap, so you don't have puddles of stormwater on the uphill
sure.
Sides.
Right.
And then I see that they all require 65% of the homeowners to approve it. Is there a reason that we need to have that in there? Is there a reason the council can't just take action without bothering with what the homeowners?
Well, yeah, then you don't need guidelines. This is for neighborhoods to get involved and not just have one person show up and say, I want a speed bump. So that was the, because they do cause noise and, you know, eliminate parking and all sorts of things that some of the residents may not want to sacrifice in exchange for the speed hump or some other traffic calming measure.
Right, but we just said that the city is responsible for the streets and we're liable for whatever happens. So my thinking is if it's determined that it's a safety hazard and an issue, then we don't want to be bound by whatever percent the homeowners vote on. Mm-hmm. We want to be bound by what we believe are the guidelines and safe or not safe. That was what I was asking because of that.
So, if I understand in writing, clarify here, too. So the question is with regards to that 65% of public participation in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Your concern is that if 65% say they want something but it's found not to be, or it's found to be a hazard, will this strap council into saying we must go forward, or the city into moving forward, right, at the cost of the city, even though it may not be the most beneficial, or it may be, you know, I'll use the word hazard, or inconvenience, or whatever, I don't know, whatever the word is.
There's two facets. There's that aspect. And there's the aspect of there is major speeding going on, and a handful of the neighbors that live on the major speeding roads all want to get action done, and the majority of the neighborhood doesn't want to bother with it. So those neighbors that want to get action done, they can't because they get outvoted, when in reality, the city's gone through the safety study, and we've checked it and we verified, yeah, it is a safety issue, but then our hands are tied because the homeowners association.
It's a collaborative process. The idea is to come to an agreement between the city and the neighborhood on what works for both the city and the neighborhood. So they don't want speed humps, you do, you know, a choke point, you do a speed cushion, speed button, you know, a median, striping. You know, there's all sorts of different things to do, and somewhere in all those items of
possibilities, there's something that everyone will agree on.
Gotcha.
Everyone?
Well, since I'm a professional.
Councilor Gary.
Thanks. I just want to maybe just make a few more comments. I do appreciate Councilman Williams, Councilman Gamble's perspective on the money issue. Ultimately, you can't fight City Hall thing, and I forgot to bring my letter tonight. I found it, the letter that I wrote in 1998 asking for speed bumps. Got a nice mayor from a letter from Mayor Holman at the time, the late Mayor Holman. Feel like you can't fight City Hall. There's an issue, and giving. It's not just one person coming. There's a board of an HOA that represents a community that feels like there's an issue. It doesn't feel like there is a way. I mean, I felt like the same on my street. My street's different because it's classified at a higher level. To give them the option to pay for it. Yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of paperwork here to do something that, to me, could and should be simpler. I understand, things need to work together. This would be below that threshold that we're talking about. If it's below the threshold, allowing a community that wants it to put it in there. And maybe it has to be temporary, something like that. But making sure that they have, there may be other pockets in Monroe that may want to do the same thing. If that HOA wants to pay for it, even though maybe it's, it's just below, with the way we have it here, we wouldn't be able to do anything about it. Something that gives them the opportunity, if they want to pay for it themselves, that they'd be able to do that. I personally would like to see something like that. 65% thing, what if it's 51? I mean, there's still more people that want it than not and feel like it's a need. So maybe I have an issue with that as well. And it'd be tough once you did it for one community, with $18,000, if we don't have the money. That's a great point. But if it is below the threshold, if it's above the threshold, it's an issue we need to deal with. If it's below the threshold, giving community X in town the opportunity to pay for it themselves, I think that's important. If they want to do it, and it's an official body like an HOA board coming and saying, this is our neighborhood wants this, our neighborhood, and here's our case, and no, it's 28 miles an hour instead of 25 miles an hour, but here are some of the speeds that we've clocked in the neighborhood. It doesn't bring the average all the way up, but there's clearly a situation that needs to be remedied. It just doesn't meet all the number standpoints. I think that's, if we're going to do something like this, I'd want to make sure that was part of it as well. Leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilor Gary and Councilor Davis.
So is this a program? Are we looking at this as a program that the city has that has standards that you have to meet the standards, and then the city is funding it, which the city can't afford, so therefore it doesn't get funded and it becomes ineffective.
I mean, it gets on the list with all the other projects, and the council can decide whether or not that rises to the level of being funded in any given year.
Or, well, then conversely, can this be a city standard? If we look at it as a standard, where if an individual or a group of individuals say, well, we understand the city doesn't have the funds, but what we do, therefore, we would like to move forward with this, notwithstanding the standard in this case, don't even meet the standard that is set on this, but they have the funding and they're willing to do that. You see what I'm doing? I'm saying, I see a program that the city runs and operates and maintains, or I see it as the city's standard that we have movement latitude. We can work with people, things like that. If we can't do it, and they can, then as long as they meet our standard and we set up that standard in this, then we allow that to happen. Is this all that together?
No, and there's nothing in this that says that if
it's got to be one or the other.
You want to give the city the money in order to be able to fund it, that's fine. Which is slightly different than what Councilman Gary is talking about, is if you have the money, you can do it, even if it doesn't meet the standards.
Well, then that would be a point. Even if it doesn't meet the standards, then it's not money coming from on us from the city. But if they have the money and they're willing to fund that program, even if it is below the standard, it meets their standard and their desire.
I understand.
And they go ahead and do that. That's,
I have to ask for legal counsel on that, and whether the city has a standard and something that's installed that doesn't meet the standard, and someone drives down the street and has an accident because of that, whether or not, what's the city liability exposure?
And I'm seeing the standard as our trigger for whether we would spend money if we have the money, as being that standard. Now, in their case, it's already, you know, it's already pulled that trigger for them. They've got the money, they're willing to go with it. So I see that standard not as a safety issue or anything else like that. It's just a matter of whether or not we write a check or not. If somebody else is willing to write that check, then why would we want to stop from that?
Because there's lots of court cases about the engineering design flaws of a street. And when somebody gets in an accident, there was a recent case, you know, involved a telephone pole that was, that even though the person was drunk, they hit it, and that wasn't there wasn't a standard for having that in there. The city was liable.
So if we have that standard for ourselves,
that's why.
And then that standard,
we'd have to check on legal counsel for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, as far as whether the speed is high enough to warrant us putting in a speed bump.
That's what I'm talking about.
But as far as the speed bumps go themselves, they have to meet that standard, that the engineering standard.
Absolutely.
That we would foresee they should fall under or be covered by the liability or anything like that, because they did meet standards.
If I may clarify, I don't believe that I heard you say that what you were proposing was that a community builds the mountains, if that's the case. You're just saying that they can pay for them, and the city would build them to the,
yes,
to the specifications that's
the way I would see it being done. It's because all it boils down to is a matter of funding. If we don't have the funds to do that, but somebody else does, we have the standards that have to be met. And so if those, if they can fund that project, then why tell them, no, you can't, we can't do that because we can't afford to do that when they're capable of doing it.
Thank you. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. That's kind of what my original point was. My other concern is that with a policy like this in place, I'm concerned about liability if we end up doing a traffic study that warrants traffic calming measures. We don't have funds available to do them. Then there's an accident. It seems like we've opened ourselves to easily for potential litigation to say, you did the traffic study, you knew there was a problem there, and you didn't do it because you didn't have any money for it. So, I'm not sure why a speed hump is required versus a speed bump. I'm sure there's reasons for that. Probably car damage or something along those lines. But, to what Councilmember Davis was talking about, if the city had design standards for these and communities wanted to pay the city to put them in place, I would think that we could have a smaller policy around where they're potentially allowed. But then it takes it all off of the city and it puts it on the backs of those coming in and making the request for it. I think that if my community wanted three speed bumps, or speed humps, and we came and presented our case to the city and said, here, we have the money to do it, and there was a design standard, it would be very similar to a building permit for just about anything else, as opposed to saying the city has a policy and we voted, so you guys have to come in and fund this and hope that we have the money to do it. So is that something that's possible where we could have just the design standards?
We'll have to look into that, because I know that the city's insurance carrier, Washington City's Insurance Authority, has concerns about doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, to me, that would be about the only way I would want to vote in favor of this. I'm not in favor of passing this particular thing that's before us today, simply because we don't have the wherewithal to carry it out. And once we've got it in place, we will have people requesting traffic studies. There will be then data. And not only that, we've already established this doesn't even help the people that originally came and asked for the help with the speed up. So,
but you can decide what the standard is.
Yeah, well, for me,
so,
yeah, I wouldn't even go that far. I would not. I'm not in favor of this. I am in favor of something that allows people to come on behalf of their homeowners association and fund and pay the city to install them in their neighborhoods. But that's where I would draw the line.
Thank you, Councilor Gamble.
Yeah, I would just add to that that there would be a HOA certified vote with a quorum.
Yeah, the boards. Yeah, representing their
members.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
I guess, you know, the piece that I would be more inclined is that there would actually be a vote. So it would come from the HOA board, which would be a certified vote, but you know, homeowners associations vote on things on a yearly basis,
okay.
That it would be a required vote. So, because then, the one thing, you get three people on a board, say we want to, a lot of those will have we'll put liens on people's houses and all that kind of stuff because they'll put one-time things. It's 70%. We just saw it with the water deal. Okay. We had a whole slew of people in here. And that would just be me. I would not be in favor of it. It would need to be, the HOA board would come in with a certified vote from the membership saying, yeah, this is what we want.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that.
And a cashier's check.
A cashier's check.
Awesome. I heard some direction, but I don't know that I'm real clear on what council is wanting back. Brett?
No.
You don't
need sure. I heard a couple directions. I had one for me specifically on the pricing side of things.
Yeah.
I think the council is interested in seeing this in a revised form that is more geared towards, as opposed to that there's a set of data or study that would say, okay, this is when we would take action or this is when we would put the calming devices in. We would like to see something that was more along the lines of if we're approached from a homeowners association, that the requirements that they would have to meet in order to, I just mentioned, a certified vote from the board or whatever they, support, and that they would be financially responsible and what that process looks like. That's kind of what I heard from everybody, right?
And the engineering standards are met as well.
Correct. So,
the
design standards.
Design standards.
So we're looking towards the trigger being coming from a homeowners association, and then that where the financial piece of it would lie. I think is what I heard across the board. I did make mention of, and I hear Councilman Williams' point that hey, if you put the data pieces in place, and then we go out and we do it, there's a piece of me that says if it tells us that we need to have it there, then maybe we probably should, put it in. So, personally, I'm not totally divorced from that. And maybe there's a component of that, in there. But from the underlying comments that I heard from across the board is that more people were inclined towards a policy that were approached, from a homeowners association or brought forward. Does that make sense?
One is, older parts of town don't have homeowners associations. So, what happens if someone, is it a homeowners association of a homeowners association there, or 65% of their residents if there's not a homeowners association?
Good question.
Yeah. Other one is, you want to leave, if someone comes in and says, I think there's too much fast traffic on our street. The document as presented gives staff something to go on. Okay, we go out and do it and say, okay, yes, your 85th percentile speed is 41 miles an hour, which would allow the city to get into the queue of doing something about it. So do we want to leave that there so it's not, well, fine, if you want something done, bring us a whole bunch of money and we'll do it for you. Or, so do you want to have more of a, this program with the next chapter that says, however,
Now, that would personally be my preference.
Okay.
So I think that's what you heard from me, right? Is exactly what you're describing. That, you know, I would like to see the both, because I do think if the data shows it, you know, type of deal. I guess the question would be, and Tom's got his light on, so
go ahead. Well, you still have the floor. You still have the floor, but I think what you're saying is appropriate. If the trigger is reached, I think the city is under some type of obligation to take action.
Absolutely.
What we're talking about tonight is allowing for a neighborhood to, or what I think I'm hearing here is allowing for the neighborhood to install a calming device of some sort or another. Even if you're not reaching that trigger point, but the burden of that cost is now then on the homeowners in that area. Kind of where we're going. And before I go to Councilmember Williams, you did have a question. You said that you wanted to speak to our insurance carrier.
Yes.
And that was with regards to?
If the city says that, if there's someone in the document that says it's, you know, 85th percentile of 35, or if you decide it's 30, or if you decide it's 28, that it's not that, and they bring in money, what are the implications of that? You know, even if they build the speed up in the right shape.
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay. And the only thing the first question that you had, I think that's why I'm in favor of both, is because I think it gives that person who's not part of the homeowners association at least a path to go down. Right? So, but I guess the follow up question is that, so what happens when they still want the survey?
Right.
They don't have that path that we would be putting in place, but
right.
They can knock doors.
Yeah, to answer Brad's questions, I would start as a small policy first and just addresses HOAs.
Okay.
At least we could start there and get something. And I'd like to see something where we have some mechanism for a request comes in from a homeowners association and they fund the city to go do a design and say, yep, this is where we would potentially put the speed bumps or whatever it is. We've done the design, here's what the estimated cost would be. They can go back and take a vote on their with their homeowners association if they have the funds to present it, and then they come back. Then the city would then, you know, go ahead and do those. The only question that you brought up is that, you know, with the insurance company, do we have to have a traffic study? What's the ramifications there? If the insurance company says that it doesn't matter if a homeowners association, you know, it's in a retirement community and everyone's driving, you know, golf carts, and they want speed bumps anyways, then if the insurance company says that's fine, then I guess I'd be okay with it as well. But that's the one piece that then we'd have to, as a council, probably decide what that threshold is. But at least we would give a mechanism for HOAs to at least start this process, and then if it looks like it works, we could expand it to other areas of the city, like what you brought up in areas, and we'd have to come up with some policy for, you know, when you're not a homeowners association, what.
Brad, did you have something you want to say?
My third question.
Oh. I'll yield to Brad.
Yeah, thank you. What involvement would the city council have?
The only question I heard was that you were concerned the insurance company of the city might come back and say, if the threshold is that they have to be exceeding the speed limit by X percent and they don't meet it, then we probably have to have a discussion of what the threshold
but
is.
If they're okay with that in the overall program is, if they come to staff and with a check for, you know, $18,000, we go put three speed humps in, or does that need to come to council for approval?
I think if the insurance, for me personally, if the insurance company says, hey, if the community wants speed humps and they're going to pay for them, fine, they can do them as long as they're meeting the insurance checks off.
Okay.
It takes us completely out of the equation.
Okay.
But that was only one question.
Well, that was the third. Yeah.
Councilor.
Thank you. Okay, just so I have it clear in my head. So a request would come in not necessarily from an HOA, but from any interested party regarding some traffic calming device. That would initiate a study by the city to determine whether or not it meets that 85% whatever. If the answer is yes, we would go, the city would be responsible for installation because it would be our liability for the design of the road.
Potentially.
Okay. If the answer is no, then if they have an HOA, they can do, they can request that it be done and pay for it themselves. If they don't have an HOA, then we go to Councilmember Gamble's position, which is we start, they start knocking on doors and organizing themselves enough in order to create the funds in order to produce or to get the calling device. Is that correct?
I think that's what Mr. Councilmember Gamble said, but it's not what Councilmember Williams said.
Okay, so that's where I'm getting
the to clarify my position is, please. We have a policy that starts first with homeowners associations, because that's the most, they have a governing board, mm-hmm. they're already represented. And so our initial policy starts there, not the one that we saw today. And that they first come forward funding the design study by the city to say, you know, where they would go in the neighborhood.
Okay.
The city then gives them an estimated cost of what it would be to put them in.
So it actually starts off as an HOA request.
Correct.
And then and you my, still my, paid for it by the HOA.
Correct. It's completely funded by the HOA.
At this stage. And then later on we'll go to or use the non-HOA.
Yeah. So the initial policy slash program would be for HOAs.
Yeah, let's get it up and running and make sure it works.
Yeah, okay, I can agree with that.
All right, I just want to make sure it's clear. Thank you.
Okay. Is that a general nod for a bit?
Okay. You're clear?
I think I'm clear.
Okay. All right. So no action tonight. We'll bring this back at a subsequent meeting. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, Brad, I just want to thank you for all your research and your work. There's a lot of details here. And we'll look forward to the next version.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's a very popular discussion item.
Oh, come on.
On the agenda, and that is the new name for the new East West Street. Yes.
Should we put a speed on
cross? Yeah.
All the discussions this evening are very
interesting. I want to have the name. Just me.
That's on Jeff.
So
family. It's my family. Yeah. No, actually, it used to be called Johnson Lane. Before we changed it to 159 in 1993, when the city council directed staff to go to the regional grid. And so when I was looking around what to call it, is that Johnson still shows up in Google.
Okay.
And it still has a little dot at that intersection. So I said, well, at least if someone Googles Johnson, they won't be completely lost because it shows up already. So this is slightly different. It has red on it versus the one you had in your packet.
Sure.
That shows the 9 houses that would have a new address. The 4 houses in the Dennis Way plat, we just keep the same number, change the street name from 159th to Johnson Street, and then the 5 residences that are currently on 159th that existed there before the Dennis addition was done, which get new numbers and new street name. Comments, questions, concerns, direction?
Thank you. I move to rename 159th Street East to Park Lane and Johnson Street and change house numbers as needed along the section of the roadway to the city grid.
Second. Motion is made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Camp to rename 159th Street East to Park Lane and Johnson Street and change the house numbers as needed along the section of the roadway to the city grid. Councilmember Gamble.
To remain consistent on this particular, I'm not in favor of renaming away from the regional grid. Based on all the different things we've heard, safety, all that kind of stuff, in addition to the fact that I just don't think we should do it. So, we voted no.
All right. Okay, any other questions or comments? Let's... Nothing? All right. Seeing no lights here, no comments?
Just one more
we have on that.
Were these people notified?
No.
Are you talking about the city board?
Yeah, I believe the address they were going to answer that said no.
Yeah,
so none of these folks that are going to have their address changed know that this is happening. If the council were to vote tonight. I mean, you already know where I stand, but I'm just, I just like to add that to my comments. I don't think that's totally right, but anyway.
It's taking more than 30 seconds.
An effective date would be?
If the council does not make another one of the effective immediately.
Okay. Is there any expectation on the homeowners to have their addresses changed by a certain date?
We always, in the past, when we've changed addresses, have told them to do it immediately, but that in the past, the post office has indicated that they've delivered their addresses for at least 6 months.
So the post office can and will deliver well
except as the past.
In their
yeah.
Yeah. A previous statement is
yes.
The post office. All right. Okay. Councilmember Williams?
Question. I didn't know people hadn't been notified. The street that we're talking about, does it dead end there at the end of this diagram that you get?
Yes, that's the field behind the Christian Reform School.
So, what we're talking about is renaming the entire length of the street as opposed to just the new addition?
Well, no, just from the right arrow. Yeah, where Park Lane comes into it.
Yeah, I guess I would sure like to know what those five people think before I vote for this as well, as opposed to having them show up here next week.
I can make a pretty good guess of what they think. Which would be no, you know.
Which would be what?
Which would be no. Don't change it. As we discussed last time, we talked about this, is that if given the choice, people don't want to change their addresses. But we can certainly notify them if that's the council direction and bring it back on the 3rd of September.
Well, there's a motion, so we'll understand what the direction of the council will be after the vote is taken. Councilor Green.
Thanks. What I really actually had hoped for was just the four. Of course, I made the motion for all of it. I'm happy to re-amend the motions. The four in the new section is really all I had intended. That's the new section. These five over here was actually new to me. It's not my intent. It's just the new section of the road. So if we want to do just from Alden Lane to the east, then there's people that don't live there yet. Those houses were just built, those four red ones on the far right. That's actually what I wanted to see happen. If it's going to be an issue, yeah, and those five people haven't been notified, then great. Make it from Alden Avenue East, Johnson Street, and be done. That's what I thought would take 30 seconds to do. That's the new section where nobody lives and the houses are just being built. So no harm, no foul, when nobody lives there already. So if we can do it from Alden Avenue East, we'll never hear about it again. It's over and done. And that's so if we can amend the motion and that is okay to do that, then let's do that. Then there's no one to notify. Jason will still vote no. Councilmember Gamble will still vote no. But
yeah, that's correct.
So I will amend my motion to make from Alden Avenue East my original motion to be Johnson Lane. Or Johnson Street, southeast. Sorry. Thank you. If the second agrees, whoever the second was.
Okay, but the maker of the motion is amended his motion.
Motion to rename 159th Street east of Alden Avenue to Johnson Street and change the house numbers as needed along the section of roadway to the city.
Second
of
the motion is as concurred and is also good with that. So. Concur.
Thanks.
So, with that, any other questions? I guess I'm going to have to turn to Brad and just ask Brad. In your engineering professional, I don't know if how much it makes sense to do this from there. I mean, to me, if we were going to change
the most sensible thing to do, or sensical thing to do, would be to change it from 179th all the way there, so that it's one continuous street, Johnson. What will happen at this point is we'll have four homes at the end of a block of 159th that will have another address.
They already have the address, if I may. They need a new street, that makes sense. They need a street name, that makes sense.
No, so the question is that you did it from parking for a reason.
Because that's what it was actually on the tape that said that they didn't want to go from Park Lane being city grid to the county grid to the city grid. We're going around that corner. So I interpreted that to mean that it was wanting to be changed from Park Lane East.
Okay, all right. Well, there is a motion on the floor. Any other questions, comments? We will, yes, Councilmember Williams?
Yeah, just that what you said. When this originally came to us, I was expecting it was all of 159th Street. So hearing what I heard tonight kind of changes my opinion on it. So Councilmember Gary, I'm also going to vote no, just because it seems that we're changing the numbering system that's only affecting four houses, and the whole everything else around it is on the old system. So my lifetime, whenever. That's all.
All right, Councilmember Gary.
Thanks. The numbers have already been changed to the city grid, and they have a county street, so that is and needs to be remedied. That's the point of why I brought this. This is a brand new street, and you need to have a city name to match. Otherwise, this address shows up in Mill Creek with four-digit number on 159th Street. That's a Mill Creek address. So the point is to make this the point is to make it so that it actually has a city block number, which is 1152. That's 11 blocks from downtown, but it's on a county-named street. That's the inconsistency that I'm looking to change. If I'm not going to do that, we might as well change the house numbers to county house numbers, which then wouldn't be house numbers that actually make sense on the street that they're on. So leaving it the way that it is leaves the inconsistency, which is what the police department and fire department are talking about, creating problems, trying to fix a problem by doing this. That's the point of doing it. So either change the house numbers to match 159th or make it a city-named street to match the house numbers. Got it. But leaving alone is the problem we're trying to fix. Leaving alone doesn't solve the problem.
Got it. Thank you for the clarification. Yeah. So, but you're just talking about from 1152?
The brand new part of the street. Brand new part of the street. So from Alden Avenue over. So you'd actually have an intersection. You move it on here, it's Johnson Street. Yeah. My intent was never those other five houses. The brand new part.
Okay, and I didn't catch that the distinction that those are four-digit numbers. The rest of them are five. So they're right now we're inconsistent.
Exactly.
With looking the rest of the houses on the
and leaving everything else alone. No errors. Just the new section.
Okay.
Thank you. Just trying to correct the problem. Thank you, Mayor, for recognizing me.
Okay. All right. So, with that said, any other questions? No. We'll take a vote then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion does pass 5-1. All right. Okay. We shall go on now to council member reports. Council? Evening this evening. Councilmember Geary?
Oh, not tonight, thanks.
Councilmember Williams?
No, thank you.
Councilmember Kent?
No.
Councilmember Davis? Councilmember Gamble?
I'm just disappointed that it didn't come back to us as Gearing Street. I just want to go on the record.
I would have voted no.
Yeah. I would have felt much better voting against that.
I would have done the same.
Councilmember Hammer.
Looking forward to the parade that's coming this afternoon. And it's always a highlight for my family and my friends. And with the parade and everything come out. Monroe's getting ready to shut it. So.
Very good. Last week, Jeff Sachs, Economic Development Manager Jeff Sachs, stated that he'd be bringing something back to council for decision and direction. Discovered that council action was not necessary. Instead, a letter was drafted, which I signed and sent off. So what he had asked for last week, if you remember, was not necessary for council action. So our recommendation has been sent by me based on the staff. Anything additional this evening, Chief? Anything from you?
Yes, with the passage of 0.1% unless I hear real concern from council members, we would like to start the process of trying to find two additional police officers with the approximate hiring at the end of the year, towards the end of the year. If we hire them sooner, we have money in our current budget from salary savings that we can cover it without a budget amendment and the like. But it's going to take us probably at least 3 months to close in on a couple of good candidates. So if you have objections to that, please let me know.
Anything else, Chief?
The parade and the fair starts on Thursday, so stay off the street.
Diane, anything for this evening?
Tonight.
Right. City Administrator Brown.
Nothing this time. Draft agenda for September 3rd, 2013. I did want to inform the council that we're still working to get Mr. Snyder scheduled to come and talk about the marijuana sales and screening production and all that stuff. So we're still working on that schedule. September 3rd, 2013, we have a presentation by Providence Medical Center in regards to the new building on North Kelsey. We have a consent agenda, and at this time we have no other items scheduled. For the draft agenda for September 10th, 2013.
Yeah, just looking at you.
I was wondering if I can request that we add something to the extended agenda. And if it's okay with the Finance and HR Committee meeting, which we're meeting on September 3rd, that we discuss those compensation. I have some information that I put together, and then hopefully we can come back with a consensus and get it scheduled on September 10th council agenda. Okay.
What's the topic?
Council compensation. For September 10th, if there's another.
I'll support that being on the agenda.
I couldn't hear you, Councilman Williams. Did you say that would be at the committee meeting on the 3rd?
That we address the topic on the 3rd and then come back with a recommendation on the 10th.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, we do still have a need for an executive session, and City Attorney, I'll turn to you now for the purpose of such
for the purpose of discussing potential litigation with legal counsel. The executive session lasts approximately 5 minutes, after which the council may take action in open session when you reconvene.
All right, very good then. Appreciate that. And with that said, we will now go into executive session at this time. So, okay. All right, we are back in regular session. And Councilmember Hanford?
Motion to adjourn.
You did.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Camp to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.